This is the Transcend Human Podcast, a show dedicated to the spirituality and psychology of the human condition. This year, however, we're taking a detour together as I venture into the world of writing. Each episode documents my journey from the big idea to a complete fiction novel. Join me through the highs and the lows that are sure to be part of this creative process. All right, friends, welcome back to the Transcend Human Podcast. Great to be with you. It is July 8, 2024. So the elephant in the room is the fact that this has been a really long time in between episodes. I think typically we do every couple weeks, but this is going on 4 or 5 weeks. I don't even know at this point. So it's been a little crazy around here, and I'll go into that in a minute. But first, let me start by saying the studio today, also known as my office where I work, has a lot going on. So we have a cat. Name is Granger. Granger is mostly quiet, but she can get a little crazy. So that's going on in the house. And at any point in time, you may hear that in the background. Then we added a cat. The other day, my daughter moved back home for a few weeks, brought her cat with her. So now there are two cats in the house. And apparently when there's two pets, there's a lot of running and chasing and play fighting and all of those things. So that's been going on this morning as well. So if you hear two cats in the background, feel blessed. And then there is a fan running in my office pointing at me to keep me cool. I think most of us in this country have dealt with heat on some level in the past month. I still remember the reports coming out on the news about this heat dome or something like that that we were experiencing this summer. And so we are experiencing that here in Corona, California. And today I think it's supposed to be 98 degrees. So it's a little warm. I got to have this fan running. So you may hear it in the background. That said, let's get into why it has been so stinking long since our last episode. So since the last time, here's some milestones. We had Father's Day on June 16th. So congratulations to all you fathers out there. It's been a few weeks. I just wanted to take a minute to thank each and every one of you for your place in the grand scheme of things. Fathers definitely hold a unique position in the home, not necessarily the traditional Christian hierarchical position most people think of, but perhaps more in the way that they balance out the home. So in a healthy father, you can be a very strong figure to your kids and bond with them, and they can look up to you. If you're an unhealthy father, that role can become less helpful, even abusive at times. And then there are the fathers who have just left altogether. And I feel like that creates a hole that can never really be filled in your children. Now, you may not realize that and the importance of your role as a father, but it's there. And your family relies on you a lot more than I think you realize. So just keep doing what you're doing. Keep doing the next right thing. It's easy to get focused on the negative or things that we've done that we've kind of failed at being a father. For me, that was, 8 to 10 years of alcohol abuse that nearly tanked my marriage. But if I made that the one thing that I focused on every day, I'd be done, because I can't stand that I did that and that I went through that with my family. But if I can keep that in the past where it belongs and focus on today, then I have a chance, and my family has a chance at keeping their dad where they want him to be. Next up, 25th anniversary. Yeah, Tammy and I have been married for 25 years. Huge milestone, to be sure. Quarter of a century. And we're in that fun stage where more of our lives have been together than apart. In other words, Tammy and I met when I was 25, and we were married when I was 28. So 25 years of marriage later, and basically more of my life has been lived with her than without her. Just something crazy to think about. But I can't tell you how thankful I am for Tammy, the fact that she chose to be with me and still chooses to be with me every day, every morning, all these years later. She's an amazing wife, mother, bonus mom to other kids, homemaker, partner in a nonprofit that's basically changing the landscape of Orange, California, and so much more. Cannot wait to see what the next 25 look like. Next up, I think we've talked on the podcast about Tammy and I working with Safe Families. So one of the families that we worked with quite a while ago, we've kind of kept in touch with, and the two girls are kind of considered our bonus kids. And recently the mom hit a rough patch and she was forced to move out of the hotel that they were living in. And they were unhoused for a few days, basically living out of their car. So we helped her out by taking the youngest of her kids and let her stay with us for a while mom got some things figured out. And now things are back to normal. But unfortunately, this is a very common thing, I think, around the country, but definitely in Southern California, with the high cost of living, low wages for standard service industries like retail, food service, gardening, etc. Many people live paycheck to paycheck, so the loss of a job or a sudden medical issue, basically anything like that, can literally push you out of your home and make you an unhoused person, which is just sad. Next up, an update on our foster situation. So we had to have another home study, this time by the new county that we live in, Riverside County. So that took place, and it looks like everything's been officially completed. The files have been moved over from Orange County to Riverside County. So we should be able to receive our new license soon, which means our house will be open to another kiddo at some point soon. And then finally, an update on our oldest. So it's kind of the end of an era. She graduated from Pepperdine a year ago, and she's been living in San Diego, working full-time, preparing to go to law school in the fall. And her fiance is heading out for a 5-month deployment in the next week. Well, actually, last night he just left. So she's going to come home, stay with us for a little while until she starts law school in the fall. And then at some point, her and my wife will drive across the country so that she can have her car at school in New York. So there you go. Like I said, there is a lot going on, not only in the world around us, but for me and my family, extended family. So that's, you know, I'm not going to call it an excuse, but there are definitely things that have gotten in the way of me recording podcast episodes. But I have been able to write off and on, so we'll get into that a little bit in today's topic. Today's topic is Writing the Hemingway. Chapter 1, Why Hemingway? Chapter 2, How I Incorporate It? And Chapter 3, Knee Deep in the Hoopla. Chapter 1, Why Hemingway? So I've spent a lot of time on story, story structure, and elements of story. But what happens when you get right down to the nitty-gritty and you actually start writing? Turns out there are just as many articles, blog posts, podcast episodes, books, and YouTube videos on this part as there is on story structure, spelling and grammar, dialogue, how to describe things correctly, show don't tell, literary versus commercial prose, and the list goes on and on. But what I've learned about myself from all the research that I've done on story structure is that it's really a black hole for me. It's a rabbit hole that I can't go down without getting lost. So what I'm trying to do is steer clear of the bulk of the information about writing as well. Instead, I've adopted a larger strategy to help me write the way I want to write, and at the same time, keep from making dumb mistakes along the way. As a newbie to the writing world, I'm not the most eloquent, and I'm not up to speed on things like, you know, the finer points of the English language. My spelling is pretty good, especially with the help of spell check, but my grammar, it's a little rusty. I couldn't tell you what a dangling participle is if my life depended on it. Now, I'm not saying that I know nothing about writing. As we've talked about before, I've always had it in me somewhere, all the way back to high school, I used to write short stories and scenes that I could see so clearly in my mind's eye. I didn't read a lot when I was younger, but more recently, I've always had a book that I'm working through. So I'm reading good writing, and after a while, it starts to wear off. When I go back and I read some of the stuff I've written recently, I find myself getting into it the same way that I would get into a novel that I purchased off of Amazon. So I'm confident that I can do it. At the same time, I also understand my limitations and my need for growth. So as I dive into my work in progress and start the grand adventure of bringing my big idea to life, I'm going to need a little help. And that help comes straight from Ernest Hemingway himself. Not the man. I never knew him, obviously, and he passed away in 1961 at the young age of 61. Hemingway was born in Oak Park, Illinois. He worked as a reporter. He was involved in World War I as an ambulance driver and was wounded in battle in 1918. He also worked as a reporter during the Spanish War and the World War II at the Normandy landings. During this time, he published many of his more notable works. And he was also honored with a Nobel Prize for Literature in 1954. Unfortunately, Hemingway struggled with alcohol most of his life. Sound familiar? And this alcohol use may have exacerbated a disease he had called hemochromatosis, which ran in his family. Shortly before his death, he was involved in two plane accidents, literally on the same day. But in the end, it was suicide that ended Hemingway's life. Sadly, his sister and brother took their own lives as well. And his daughter, Margot, also took her life at the young age of 42. Hemingway was larger than life on so many levels. His crazy life experiences, the wars, the drinking, the wild lifestyle, and all of his travels. It's as if he was chasing life with his hair on fire, searching for the next big thing that he had not accomplished yet. So it's no wonder that he was such an accomplished writer, with all of his experiences fueling the words that he put to paper. So why am I talking about Hemingway? Why did I just give you a little history lesson on the life of this famous author? Well, not because of his life, but because of the impact he had on writing and literature in general. You see, there are many famous authors out there, and we can definitely learn from them by reading their books. But every once in a while, an author comes along who changes the way people write. And that's powerful. When you can not only publish works that stand the test of time, but completely change the way future writers do what they do. According to Donna Radley on the Writers Write website, Hemingway offered a unique writing style. It was distinctively lean and economical. This is thanks to his journalistic background and his willingness to swim upstream from the elaborate prose popular in his day. His tight style with declarative sentences changed the landscape of American literature, and his writing continues to impact readers and writers alike. The article goes on to list 11 famous quotes from Hemingway on writing. And here they are. First, all you have to do is write one true sentence. Write the truest sentence that you know. Number two, there is nothing to writing. All you do is sit down at a typewriter and bleed. Number three, write hard and clear about what hurts. Number four, all good books are alike in that they are truer than if they really happened, and after you are finished reading one, you will feel that. Number five, all that happened to you and afterwards, it all belongs to you. The good and the bad, the ecstasy, the remorse, the sorrow, the people and the places, and how the weather was. If you can get so that you can give that to people, then you are a writer. Number six, the most essential gift for a writer is a built-in, shockproof shit editor. Actually, that's wrong. Shit detector. Number seven, if a writer stops observing, he is finished. Experience is communicated by small details intimately observed. Number eight, I always try to write on the principle of the iceberg. There is 7/8 of it underwater for every part that shows. Number nine, poor Faulkner. Does he really think big emotions come from big words? He thinks, I don't know the $10 words. I know them all right, but there are older and simpler and better words, and those are the ones I use. Number 10, The hard part about writing a novel is finishing it. And finally, number 11, it's none of their business that you have to learn how to write. Let them think you were born that way. Good stuff, right? So how am I using Hemingway in my writing? Chapter 2, how I incorporate it. Simply put, I'm using a tool that was inspired by his way of writing. It's called the Hemingway app. It is free, at least a version of it is free. It's an online text editor that edits your work based on the principles Hemingway used to write. You simply start typing, and it highlights areas where you could improve. It identifies things like sentences that are hard to read, sentences that are very hard to read, spelling issues, grammar issues, weak language, and words that have simpler alternatives. And this is all available in the free version. If you want, you can upgrade to Hemingway Editor Plus, and this version adds a few other bells and whistles, one of which is incorporating the use of AI to help you fix the problems identified by the writing algorithm. I'm currently using the free version, but I have entertained the idea of moving to the paid version. I am, however, just a little wary of the use of AI in the writing process. At some point, I may do an entire podcast episode on AI, as it cannot be ignored at this point. It's here to stay, and we're going to have to decide for ourselves if and how we use it in our writing career. But that's for another day. So back to the way that I use the Hemingway app. In a previous life, I knocked out 5 chapters of my big idea. They sat collecting dust for many years because I didn't know enough about plotting, planning, and story structure. But now that I have some of those tools in my belt, I wanted to attack those early chapters and incorporate them into my new structure. So I sliced and I diced, finding large chunks of story that worked well as scenes. I separated them out, and then I started to write. I had 2 scenes for my prologue, so I took the first chunk from Google Docs, I pasted it into the Hemingway app, and immediately the app lit up like a Christmas tree, identifying sentences that were hard to read, numerous adverbs, and a lot of passive voice. So I dove into the deep end and I started to rewrite, both for content purposes, so that the story matched up with my newer story structure and the future world that I envisioned, but also in fixing my writing so that it better matched the Hemingway style of writing. 2,000 odd words later, scene 1 is in the books. I sat back and smiled. My first real scene. And it finally felt right. The scene actually works for many reasons, but 3 that stand out immediately. First, because it's part of my larger story, and it has a place and a purpose in the larger outline. Second, because it follows the story grid requirements of having the 5 commandments of storytelling within it. So in my first scene, there's an inciting incident, there are progressive complications, there's a crisis, a climax, and a resolution. And finally, because it has been vetted by the Hemingway app, or Hemingway himself, if you want to look at it that way. So I took that scene, copied it, pasted it back into Google Docs, did some additional formatting, and then moved on to my second scene of the prologue. And that's what I've been doing since we last spoke. I completed my prologue consisting of 2 scenes, each telling the story of Trinity, an ancient artifact found by a research team 75 years before our story begins. Next, I completed the first sequence of scenes in the actual story. So this is scene 1 through 3, and it basically tells the story of Jordan Sullivan, an archaeology professor who is down on his luck. Life hasn't gone the way he expected it to, and he isn't sure if there is anything worth living for at this point. At some point, men show up at his front door and require that he come with them to Washington, D.C., where he is briefed about the artifact found 75 years ago. He's asked to lead a task force that will study the artifact and determine if it has any significant impact on our world. Jordan meets the rest of the team, agrees to go on the adventure, and gets on a plane headed for a faraway land. And that's it, the first 3 scenes, and my first cohesive sequence. 5 scenes in total, written using the Hemingway app and created from some of my original content. Chapter 3, Knee Deep in the Hoopla. So this is where I find myself. 5 scenes in, I'm ecstatic, but a few new questions have arisen. question number one, am I on the right track? My guess is that this happens to every writer from one time to another, right? You hit the ground running, you're having fun, everything seems to be going along as planned. Then you hit a wall, like driving to El Capitan to do some rock climbing. You research it, watch videos about it, and you're stoked. So you drive up, get out of the car, hike to the base, get all roped up, and then you look up and freak out. It's so much taller than I thought it was. This is going to take a really long time. And so it is with writing a book. You get a few scenes in and you realize, I have like 70 to go. In my case, 75 just for book one, and then another 80 for each of the following books. And you start to second guess yourself. Did I outline things well? Are these five scenes going to work well with scene number 62? Are these going to work when I'm on book three? All good questions, but I just need to keep moving forward. Each of these things can be addressed over time. If at some point I need to come back to these five scenes and make adjustments, that's what I'm going to have to do. But for now, I just need to keep writing. Question two, am I writing in my world? Let me explain. The book or trilogy that I'm writing takes place in the future, about 75 years in the future. So let's say around the year 2100. So it's a world that we probably wouldn't recognize, right? The differences between 2024 and 2100 would be obvious and jarring. In my second sequence, I have to make that obvious. Scenes 4 through 6 tell the tale of a space rover crew planning to do a hop into deep space. Obviously, this is futuristic, right? Something that could very well happen in 2100, but definitely not today. So that's good, right? But when I look back at my first sequence, scenes 1 through 3, there is little to nothing suggesting that we are anywhere but 2024, because I'm writing what I know, as if these people exist in my world today, and that's wrong, really, really wrong. So this needs to be addressed immediately. Unlike the first question, I can't just keep writing, because this is a significant error, a continuity thing, a world-building thing. And if I can't get the tone and the environment right in the first few scenes, there is going to be a major disconnect for the reader in the next scenes after that. So there you go. Knee Deep in the Hoopla, the name of a 1995 album by Starship, and a phrase defined by the Urban Dictionary as being very involved, mixed up in the excitement or fervor of the moment. That pretty much says it all, right? I'm now involved. I'm mixed up in it, and I'm excited, and I can feel the fervor of the moment. Sure, there are anxieties and there are things to fix, but at the end of the day, I'm doing what I love, and I can't wait to overcome the hurdles in my way so that I can keep moving forward. Let's land the plane. First of all, as I always say, thank you again for joining me on the journey for another installment of the Transcendent Trilogy series. I'm glad that you have this ability to come along the journey with me. Even though we don't get to see each other face to face, it's just kind of a one-way street, me talking and you listening. But at the same time, it's great to have you here. At this point, we're off to the races, writing away and experiencing all the things, the good, the bad, and the ugly. But we're on the journey, like I said, and that's all that matters. So next time, we'll dive back into some of the progress I've made and possibly address a new roadblock that I've encountered along the way. But before we go, I thought I would just tell you what I'm reading right now. I thought that would be fun. So according to Stephen King, there are two things that every good writer does. First, they write, and they write a lot. Second, they read, and they read a lot. I recently finished the third book in a series called The Emians by Paul McGowan. I have no idea how I found these books. I think my wife may have bought me the first one for Christmas or something, and I just put it off until recently. But they're a really strange series of books. They appear to have some direct tie to Amazon for some reason. I'm not sure if Amazon partnered with McGowan on creating them, or if this is just the way books look when you self-publish through Amazon. But whatever the case, I have the hardback of book one, and it only has 279 pages. So it's just a weird kind of hardback. You know, it's not a blank hardback with a dust cover. It's one of those hardbacks where the cover is actually printed on the book itself, right? I think you know what I'm talking about. So that's just kind of weird, the size and the way that it's constructed. But the crazy thing is that these books cost $30. These small 270-some page books are $30. So I wasn't about to pay that for a book that small. So I read book two and book three on an iPad through Kindle. So I have read through book one, two, and three, and I believe book four is coming out this month or something like that. So it's going to be an ongoing series, apparently. But none of that's the point. What I wanted to say about this series is that it's really interesting. The crazy thing is that some of the plots and subplots and concepts are extremely similar to my work in progress. I haven't really read anything like the book I'm writing anywhere at any time. But for some reason in this book series, he has some very interesting explanations of things and ideas about previous civilizations and things like that that help format his story, but also have this interesting correlation to what I'm writing. So it's just really weird, and it just piqued my interest, which is probably why I've read the first three already. When I finished that, I moved to the new release by Michael Crichton. Not actually Michael Crichton. So it was a book that he started before his death and was actually finished up by James Patterson. It's called Eruption, and it's been pretty interesting so far. It's a story about Hawaii and the big island and the big volcanoes on the island. Pretty technical stuff in it, which is really cool, kind of like the technical pieces of Jurassic Park. But I'm loving that right now. And then finally, I have the book Holly by Stephen King sitting on my nightstand just waiting to be read. So as soon as I finish up Eruption, I will dive into Holly. So there you go. I would love to know what you're reading and if you have any good recommendations. One other thing. So for those of you who find the story grid methodology interesting, and have done some reading and some listening to that content, they are coming out with a new book. I actually pre-ordered it. And I forget what it's even called. Here, let me look it up real quick because it's that important. I think you would find it fascinating. So what they have done is StoryGrid will take these books that they call masterworks and they will analyze them and then put them into book form and sell them. So let me go here. Shop Masterwork Guides. Masterwork Guides. So for example, here's one on Frankenstein by Mary Shelley, a StoryGrid Masterwork Analysis Guide. So that's one that's already available. They have one for Hamilton, Pride and Prejudice, The Hobbit, A Murder by Roger Ackroyd, The Murder of Roger Ackroyd, The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, Treasure Island, stuff like that. So interesting. And they are coming out with one on Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. So for those of you who are interested in the StoryGrid methodology, and you're also huge fans of Harry Potter, this book should be pretty crazy. It's a StoryGrid masterwork analysis. So basically they'll take the Sorcerer's Stone, tear it apart scene by scene, and actually explain how it was written and why it works. So super excited to get that. I believe it comes out at the end of July. And I just did media mail, so it'll probably be another 7 to 10 days after that. So probably mid-August should be able to start working on that. But if you're interested, great idea to grab that book. And that's it. Like I said, if you're interested in letting me know what you're reading, feel free to do so. You can email me at info@transcendhuman.com. Would love to hear from you, what you're reading, what your recommendations are, and all of that. With that said, have a great week, everyone, and as always, Keep transcending human.